It's 100%, mate. It's questioning it, isn't it? And it's like, I talk about autopilot a lot because I think all the times I've got myself in trouble or I've done something stupid or something that I'm embarrassed about or shameful of or any of those things, I'm not a bad person. I don't believe anyone is. I believe everyone has the capacity to be completely evil or completely amazing or bounce between the two the whole time, you know. And for me, it's just one of those things where as long as I can call myself on my own BS, then I don't normally make the mistake, if that makes sense. So as long as I can be mindful of it, and as long as I can go, hun a sec, prevention is better than cure type thing. But at the same time, it's about not pressuring yourself too much at the same time. And I think the reason I brought up dieting is because it's one of those things. I think I'm very aware that it's nearly January, which means that all being well, the gyms are open, but they're going to be slammed and they're going to be slammed. And I see it every single year. It's January, people just mash it at the gym, do really, really well, and then bail by February. And then they're back in a worse position than they were before. And I think if instead of doing that, it's that like, do you know what? I'm going to go for half a mile walk today, or I'm going to go to the gym. But it's when people load that up and they go from 0 to 100, they don't have the time or the capacity to do it.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dads show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts. If you're a first-time listener, we have insightful conversations with people who are truly masters at work and that will prompt you to think about your own life. Fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, athletes and adventurers, professors, counsellors, dads just like you and me. And today we discuss how you can step out of autopilot to enjoy the richness of life. I often talk about how you don't get a manual when you start your adult life to live by and why you ultimately end up doing what you think is the right thing at the time. In that sense, life is very much work it out as you go along. The only problem with this is that it can take you down a path you don't want to be going. And you often don't realise until it's too late. You end up on autopilot. Every conversation we have on this podcast translates the experience and expertise of our guests into practical knowledge you can use to better understand yourself as a dad, and in the process, improve your physical health, mental health, relationships, career, and the way you show up in the world as a role model to the next generation. And what's more, there is often some resources from guests which you can take away and use today. On today's episode, I delve into the life of an addict in recovery and how the conventional route of getting your life back on track after becoming addicted isn't always the best way. We delve into how harnessing simple but effective tools to break free and look to the future rather than toil over the past can be your route to freedom. My guest today is coach, musician, lecturer, business owner and public speaker Lee Bridges. As a man in his 20s, he struggled with keeping his life together whilst hiding his addiction to drugs, but overcame it in the end by stepping away from traditional 12-step programs. He's been on an amazing journey since, learning along the way, and I speak to him today about his new book, Do Shit, Get Shit Done, which chronicles the hacks he uses daily to keep his life on track. Gents, we delve into a massive plethora of issues today, like how to get out of autopilot, the toll it takes on you when trying to keep stuff together when all underneath the surface is not right, and the balance between putting too much pressure on yourself but maintaining self-responsibility. We also talk about purpose, moving towards fears, and the issue of role models across society, but specifically in the teaching profession. We really mix things up today and don't pull any punches on some issues. If you ever wondered how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives. So you will be in amazing company. And now to my conversation with Lee Bridges.
Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for having me on. An absolute pleasure.
Yeah, same here. It's kind of quite weird that out of all of the people that I interview on this podcast, as far east as Australia and far west as, you know, the west coast of the States, I've actually got someone actually on the podcast today that is in the same county as me, West Sussex.
There he is, my guy. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in East Grinstead, so I'm sort of further, I'm right up on the kind of nudging sort of Kent Surrey borders. Yeah, Kent Surrey. The posh area.
Yes, mate. So. Perfect. But no, really appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm glad you've come on, because it's really interesting the kind of book that you've just released. And the reason that I liked kind of the sound of it was the name of it to start with, the transition, do shit, get shit done. And I thought, hang on a minute, this has got to be something quite interesting, because I am quite a sort of action orientated person, and the whole kind of concept of that really kind of resonated with me. How did this book come about? What was the inspiration behind it?
Love that. Well, thank you so much. Honestly, it was a massive screw up on my part. I basically, the kind of semi-short version of this story was, I was an absolute nightmare in my 20s, mate. I was on the road all the time. I used to play in bands a lot. I was on tour. I had the classic drug problem, sex problem, you know, smoke too much, drunk too much, all the terrible things that don't make you happy, but you think they make you happy. And then it went a bit too far down that route. But at the same time, the interesting part about it was I was keeping it together. So for everybody else, I was lecturing at a college, and I did that for years. No one ever noticed. You know, I was calling the dealer first thing in the morning, going, it was insane. It was an insane, really horrible time in my life. But I was holding it together. People would always come to me for advice, which, you know, looking back on it is fairly bonkers. But I always seemed, do you remember that scene from Indiana Jones when he's like right at the start and they're all like standing out? So he comes back to the college or to the uni or whatever, and they're all standing outside like knocking on the door and he has to bust out the window. Do you remember
that? Yeah, yeah.
Kind of for some reason that would always happen at college. So whenever it was tutorials, I just have this queue of people around the corner. But the whole time I was giving out advice, I was just completely stuffing it myself. So this kind of went on and I basically remember, like, I wanted to get my stuff sorted. And I got to the point where I was going to meetings and like CA and AA and stuff like that. And I just got sick of people telling me to talk about my past and trying to, not because I'm embarrassed to talk about anything or that there's, you know, stuff that isn't worth digging up. But for me, I'm very much about what can I do now? Well, I'm happy to, like, I've learned that in the past. That's cool. But what can I do now? How can I change that? What can I do about it? How can I get out of this sticky mess? Do you know what I mean? So I got to the point one day where I got so, this guy just kept saying to me, is it a CA meeting? And he kept saying to me, he was like, right, we need to talk about, like, you know, like what things may have happened to you when you were 14 or 15. And I was like, I've done this enough, dude. I just want to get out of this. And I stormed out. I never get angry. I was angry, like, I think that time. And I was angry once in like 1999 or something like that. I'm pretty chill. But I busted out of the room. And I remember just like storming up the street. And I was like, right, I'm going to sort this out myself. And no, I had that realization, as soppy as it sounds. I was like, that guy's not going to do it. My mum's not going to do it. So-and-so is not going to do it. This is down to me. I can't point the finger anymore. I can't blame anyone anymore. I can't just be that, you know, like everything, be a victim all the time, because it doesn't work. So I started like scribing stuff down. I've never written anything in my life, really. I'm a drummer, so I don't even really constitute being a proper musician. So you know what I mean? So I was writing stuff down, and then a friend came over to my house once, and she said, she was like, what is all this stuff? And I was like, oh, shit, you know what I mean? She's flicking through, and she's like, this is really good. And now, at the same time, I managed to come off the drugs, come off everything else, completely sorted myself out. And it all started with this little game that I was playing with myself. So that sounded terrible, didn't it? A game I was playing with myself, not that I was playing with myself.
I know what you mean.
There he is, my guy. And the thing that works for me and seems to work for the majority of the people that I was talking to at the time and helping out is just that idea of something being so simple and so easy to implement that you have no excuse not to do it. So instead of that, the way that I'd normally explain it is like, I don't like the word diet. I hate the word diet. The word diet to me just means there's an end to it. Mm-hmm. It's not a lifestyle change. It's like, I'm going to do this for X amount of time and then I'm going to stop. But then what happens when you stop? Like, you know, are you going to go back? Are you going to be worse? What is it?
Yeah.
So I like the idea of something being like, instead of going like, right, I'm going to do a marathon every day because I want to get fit, I'll be like, right, I'm going to run like half a mile. I'm going to run like half a mile, but I'm going to do it every single day. And I'm going to increment it by like, you know, 0.11 of a mile or something like that. 0.11 is not even a thing, is it? But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I started playing this little game where I would just dot on one hand if I was being good and dot on the other hand if I was being bad. Little pen, literally, that's all I was doing. And within no time, it's kind of bringing me into, I suppose, bringing me into the room, making me aware of what I was doing. So instead of being on autopilot and just, you know, making a mistake and then figuring out afterwards that I'd made the mistake and be like, oh my God, I don't want to do that again. Like, why have I done that? It's trying to bring myself into the room to be like, am I going to make that mistake? And noticing it before it happens and just canning it. So to answer your question extremely long-windedly, Joe, you can tell a waffle, can't you? I wrote the book by mistake, genuinely. Like it was kind of a mistake, and the whole thing's been fairly organic and quite a weird process. But the underlying thing to it is that the whole thing is sincere. There's not any element of BS in there. There's no, I'm going to tell you to do X and Y will happen because I don't believe that. It's very sincere. These are tiny little things that you can do to your day that make you feel better, that make you happier. And if you do screw it up, there's a bunch of ways in there that make it easy for you to just go, ah, I noticed that, I can flip it, I don't need to do that anymore, you know, and fix it like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting because I know you kind of, one of the techniques that you talk about is kind of journaling, and that's one of the things that you're kind of a bit of an advocate for. And I've kind of delved into journaling. I've kind of dabbled in it on and off over the years, but I've delved into it a bit more in the last little while. And I found it kind of quite a powerful way to almost conduct your own self-therapy, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, sure.
So you're taking control and you're looking at yourself. You know, I've delved into kind of, you know, awareness and Buddhism and stuff in previous episodes, but it's that concept of kind of observing yourself. And I think that once you're kind of aware that you're not your thoughts, your brain kind of is like a thought machine creating these thoughts, that's actually quite an empowering thing for a lot of people, because then you can begin to think, well, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Do you know what I mean?
It's 100%, mate. It's questioning it, isn't it? And it's like, I talk about autopilot a lot because I think all the times I've got myself in trouble or I've done something stupid or something that I'm embarrassed about or shameful of or any of those things, I'm not a bad person. I don't believe anyone is. I believe everyone has the capacity to be completely evil or completely amazing or bounce between the two the whole time, you know? And for me, it's just one of those things where as long as I can call myself on my own BS, then I don't normally make the mistake, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So as long as I can be mindful of it, and as long as I can go, hang on a sec, prevention is better than cure type thing. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's about not pressuring yourself too much at the same time. And I think the reason I brought up dieting is because it's one of those things. I think I'm very aware that it's nearly January, which means that all being well, the gyms are open, but they're going to be slammed and they're going to be slammed. And I see it every single year. It's January, people just mash it at the gym, do really, really well, and then bail by February. And then they're back in a worse position than they were before. And I think if instead of doing that, it's that like, do you know what? I'm going to go for half a mile walk today, or I'm going to go to the gym. But it's when people load that up and they go from 0 to 100, they don't have the time or the capacity to do it. And they try and squeeze it into their schedule. Everyone's busy, right? So I just feel that it's like a lot of people put so much pressure on themselves, but they don't take that step back to go, hang on a sec, all of this is down to me. I make my choices. I am exactly where I've chosen to be. No one else has put a gun to my head to do this, this, and this. You know, so then it's down to me to make that decision. Is the decision correct or good for me? Is it bad for me? Is it good for everyone else? You know, so I just try and be really, really honest and open about where I'm at. And I screw up all the time, like constantly. But I like talking about it because I figure that if I can save someone else screwing up, perfect. That's job done. Do you know what I mean? If I screw up myself and I fix it, equally job done. I've learned something. I've done well.
Yeah.
How about you, man? How are you? Sorry, I'm waffling.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. But and funny enough, I posted about this very thing today, about how as guys, often we kind of, no one is going to beat us up like we beat ourselves up. And I think that the kind of key is to kind of look at yourself as if you're talking to your best mate, sort of thing. You know, you wouldn't expect your best mate to smack you over the head with a stick every time you do something wrong or you fuck up. But for some reason we just got this idea of just doing it to ourselves, and it's just so counter kind of productive, particularly when stuff goes wrong. You know, I made the distinction today that, you know, sometimes stuff goes wrong, which is, you know, out of your control, but we beat ourselves up about stuff that's out of our control, when in actual fact, really, it's kind of, is this in my control or is it not? If it's not, then kind of don't worry about it. If it is, then, you know, what could I do differently? Or how could I approach it a different way? Or what can I learn from this for next time? And it's kind of this idea of looking at your kind of life as almost like a Petri dish, where you're an experiment in action, if that, you're work in progress, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, mate, I couldn't agree more. Exactly that. I think I just the thing is, it's like you're meant to screw up. I genuinely believe that. But I don't think it's ever anyone's fault for making a mistake. I don't think it's your fault if you're overweight when you're a kid, or if you're a bully when you're a kid, or like whatever it is. But I do believe that as soon as you realize that that's the situation, you don't fix it, that's completely your fault. You know, that's something you need to take control of. And I see it everywhere. It puts me beside myself. It makes my heart hurt when I see people struggling. And it's not that they're not bad people. They're really, really good people. Hmm. They're just either on autopilot and the media is doing this, and, you know, this is doing this, and, you know, it's pushing you down some kind of funnel that no one should be in, that's stressful and full of lies or whatever it is. You can tell I love the media, mainstream anyway. You know, or it's just not paying attention, and it's just not being there. And then, you know, that saying, I was thinking this the other day, but you know that saying, like, it's the journey, not the destination, or is the destination? It's both. Surely it's both. Surely it's the journey and the destination. It's being as happy as you can and as positive as you can. Remembering to actually, you know, call your family to tell them you love them. Remembering to do the right thing. You know, hanging out with your kid is not, like, I was talking to someone about this the other day. We're saying how it's really easy to come home from a hard day's work or something like that, especially if you don't like your job or, you know, things like that. And you come home and quality time is actually, oh, I've treated you to a pizza, buddy. Do you know what I mean? That's not good enough. Being on your phone when you're talking to your kid, that's not good enough. And I don't think anyone, if you question people and you're like, right, what you just did, was that good or bad for the planet? Was that good or bad for you? Like, whatever it is, everyone knows the answer. But it's being mindful enough to go, hang on a sec, yeah, that's me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's checking your ego at the door as well, because we briefly touched upon this before we came on air. And I think that, you know, one concept that I am talking more and more about on my podcast and also on my content is this kind of concept of the man in the mirror, where, you know, we all have this kind of man in the mirror where, you know, you look in the mirror and you see the person that you could be as opposed to the person that you are. And I think the difficulty for a lot of people now is that they just don't know how to get to that person they could be. So they just think, oh, actually, I'm not even going to bother trying. I'm going to check out. And this is going to cause them pain. So they end up kind of self-medicating that pain and that, you know. But what goes along with that, and, you know, we talked about this off air, is this kind of concept where, if someone shows them the mirror and shines the mirror on, you know, on their kind of imperfections or whatever, their ego kind of automatically goes into kind of like a attack mode. So it's all of a sudden goes to the lowest kind of common denominator, which is emotion rather than kind of fact or intellect. And I think we're seeing this more and more now in, you know, you touch upon the kind of mainstream media and the effect that they're having on people. We're seeing this more and more where the ego is kind of running the show, and people, you know, where we are kind of so connected all the time these days, those old wise men that would kind of say, right, let's pause, let's take a step back before we react to anything, that has gone out the window right now, you know, because everyone jumps in, piles in, almost like I was talking to someone about it the other day. It's almost like, you know, when there's a fight on the school field, and, you know, all of a sudden it's just like, whoosh, everyone swarms around this like 2 meter, you know, circle around where these two lads are kind of scrapping. But what's funny is if you were standing on the other side of the school field and you've just dropped your chocolate biscuit on the floor, you're going to be more concerned with your chocolate biscuit, and you're like going to stick your head up and you're going to be like, hang on a minute, why is everyone going? Because your awareness is broken from the actual event of all these people sort of. But I think you know, that's kind of what society's getting like now, where it's just a pile in mentality rather than kind of, whoa, what, you know, what's going on here? You know what I mean?
Mate, that just made me think of you know that thing when you know when, like, I don't know, say you're driving and it's just making me laugh because this happened to me the other day. I was driving along and I will always call myself on my BS, like always. Like, I never used to. I used to lie to myself constantly, but now if I make a mistake, I'm the first person to go, oh my god, I'm so sorry, because I figured that as soon as you do that, no one can do anything to you anyway, because you put your hands up. But yeah, I was driving along the other day and someone completely cut into me on the roundabout. It was 100% their fault. There was like no part of a percentage that was my fault there. And I bibbed, not in a harsh, like, hold the horn down, just a general, like, shoot, I'm going to get hit kind of thing. And that person stopped on the roundabout, wound down their window, called me every name under the sun and was like flipping me off and stuff. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's like, it's that mentality of emotion and not actually thinking, hold on a sec, what's right and what's wrong here? You know, it goes back to that. Yeah. And people don't like to be wrong, but I mean, where does being right ever really get you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
It's like, you don't learn if you're right all the time. You know, I know plenty of people that like to be right, but I don't really see a progression there. So yeah. It's like, I think I'd rather be wrong for the most part and then continually learn, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, I think this is a beauty of podcasts. It's a beauty of what new media is doing, which I think that the mainstream media are not doing. And I think this is why the mainstream media kind of feel a little bit under threat at the minute, because there's all these different medias, YouTube, you know, podcasts, and we can have discussions that you can't have on mainstream media because there's always an agenda. So for instance, like, I've had people speak to me on here where it's kind of, oh, I really like the medium of podcasting because I can talk for an hour, no subjects are really off limits, we can generally use whatever language you want provided it's not too obscene, and it's a lot more kind of free-flowing. Whereas I think that there is, you know, some of my guests who have been on mainstream media, they're kind of like, well, hang on a minute, I spend like an hour getting my makeup done, then I'm in the green room, then I'm like literally 5 minutes, and then they're going to shoot to the news and then I'm gone and that's it, you know. And I think that there is a lot more kind of scope for sort of discussing stuff and also having sort of civil, what I would call civil discourse. You know, we see people like Jordan Peterson doing this kind of stuff, you know, where he goes on for like 3 hours and that. But it's unpackaging different concepts in a kind of civil way. And even if I don't agree with you, Lee, I can say, well, okay, so how does that work? And I can be curious about what you're saying. You can be curious about what I'm saying, rather than what's happening kind of in the mainstream media is it's like, you don't agree with me, death to you, death and destruction. And it's just become uncivilized. You know what I mean? We're like devolving rather than evolving in how we communicate.
And to be fair, dude, like, I meant to say this at the start, but I literally love what you're doing. I'm not just saying that. I podcast, and especially because I know the time and effort it takes, the people that are listening won't necessarily know what you're doing in the background, and I'm very aware of that. So fair play, mate. It's an awesome thing you're doing.
Cheers, I appreciate
people
it.
People only see that. Well, do you know what I mean? People see the finished product, and they see the event as opposed to the process. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I get and my thing has always been in this is, you know, if the things that we discuss, I can help just one person, then my kind of job is done, if you like, because, you know. And I got a message today from a guy who follows me on Instagram, and he was, you know, I think he'd been having a rough couple of weeks, and it just so happened he'd clicked open the post that I'd put on there about worrying about the things that are within your control and not control and whatever. And he sent me a really nice message and just said, mate, that couldn't have come at a better time. I've been having a really rough time. I'm glad that I saw that today. And, you know, and this is, you know, a lot of the stuff that I do content on is stuff, you know, is stuff that I may be going through. So my way of kind of getting through it is to share it with other people. And then, you know, hopefully that kind of helps them, sort of thing. So.
Massive props to you. Awesome job.
Cheers.
Why did you start the podcast?
So the reason I started the podcast was because I had gone through a journey myself, and some of the listeners will know this, that I lost my dad in 2015. It was a rough year, 2015, because my old man Duck passed away suddenly, unexpectedly. I had a massive business debt that was threatening to sink my second generation family business. I used to get up every day, you know, and it was like, it just felt like an absolute living nightmare. And so I got through 2015, and my thing had always been that I'd had a stab at meditation. I'd always been into kind of self-help books and kind of getting myself in shape and whatever. But after that point in my life, I was like, it caused me to kind of reflect. So it was like, well, what do I want to do? What do I want to leave on this world? You know, what's going to be my thing? You know, what are people going to remember me for? And it's not like, that's not coming from an egotistical point of view, but it's actually coming from a point of view, well, you know, is what I'm doing just, is this going to be it sort of thing? And I think a lot of dads go through this at this kind of period of life, having spoken to a number of different commentators and authors on this particular subject. But what I describe it as is the kind of the barbecue discussion, you know, where you meet someone at a barbecue and you're like, hi, Dave, how's it going? And he's like, yeah, it's going really well. I've just got a promotion at work, but I'm working loads of hours. You know, we've been on some nice holidays, but I'm not really seeing the kids. And I can't keep working any harder because there's only so much I can do. I'm acutely aware that my parents passed away and, you know, that I need to look after my health. So you begin to go through this kind of period of kind of self-reflection. And I think that, so that's what kind of came about for me. But I just didn't really know what to do about it. And my thing has always been sort of like taking a stab at something here and there. I chanced upon a podcast, funny enough, and a guy was talking about going through a similar thing. I was like, right, okay. And then he said, so I've got a group of guys who, it's like a membership, and what we do is we work four areas of our lives. So physical health, mental health, contribution to society, and relationships. I was like, great, that sounds fantastic. I'm going to join. So I stayed in this group for about a year and a half, and my life changed, incredibly changed. So because I had a system, you see, I'd rather than kind of just thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to go for my physical health or mental health, and I had a system in place, but also more so than that, I had a brotherhood and a tribe around me of guys who were like, that wanted to see me succeed. And they wanted me to be, you know, but also they were holding my feet to the fire. So, you know, if I came along to like a Zoom meeting and I'd not done the stuff that I said that I was going to do, they would say, Joe, you've not done the stuff that you say you're going to do. What are you going to do about it? And I'd never had that level of accountability and that level of call out culture. And it was brutal. Sometimes it was brutal, absolutely brutal. But it was good for me. It was good for me, and I needed it. But it transformed my kind of life. But the main thing I'm getting to is that I just didn't know what my kind of contribution to the world was going to be. So I started a podcast last year called Positive Impact, and which was really good. And I interviewed a ton of really cool guests on it. But I reached the stage, actually, who can I resonate with the most? Who is really the people that I can serve the most? And it's dads, because I'm a dad myself. A lot of the crap I've been through, I went through while I was a dad. And the experience I've got is useful to other dads. So, you know, on the podcast, you know, I speak to different guests and it covers different... What I'm really looking to do with the podcast is to expand people's perception of what is possible for themselves. Because I think that at the moment, I think, and this is not just dads, but I think a lot of people, they've got an idea of, you know, their parents may have said to them, well, I think you're going to be a lawyer. You're destined to be a lawyer. And they get to a point, actually, I don't really want to be a lawyer. I think I should have been an artist, or I think I should have been doing this, or I think I should have been doing this. And I think we get into this kind of rut in life, and we almost talk ourselves out of it, out of doing the stuff that we could do. And I think everyone has got that deep inside them. And one of the things I was going to ask you about is kind of, is action is quite a big theme that seems to run through a lot of the work that you do. And coincidentally, the kind of tagline for Guild of Dads is vision plus action equals meaning. And the reason that that's the tagline is because I kind of looked at the process I've been through, reverse engineered it and thought, hang on a minute, why did my life turn around? Was it the stuff that I was doing? Was it the accomplishments? Well, no, it wasn't. It was because life had become meaningful again. And the only reason that life became meaningful for me was because I developed a vision for myself in all areas of my life. I took action towards that vision, and the journey towards that vision gave me meaning. And I think 100%. That, and I think that meaning is, and one of the things I kind of, so you're interviewing me now on this one, Lee. One of the things,
man, I'm having a conversation. I love it.
One of the things that I think that kind of gripes me a little bit is, you know, because we've had the World Mental Health, Men's Mental Health last week, and is that I think that there's an oversimplification of the mental health discussion around men. And I think that the missing link in a lot of this is meaning. I'm heavily influenced by Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And I think that everyone has become so fixated in on the whole aspect of we need to talk more and stuff. When in actual fact, I think men need to find meaning. They need to find meaning in their lives. And that doesn't necessarily mean you've got to go and scale Everest or swim the Atlantic or do something crazy. It can be really simple things that you find meaningful in your own life. But I think this is the missing link, and I will probably write a book on it at some stage in the future. In fact, that's kind of my plan. But I think meaning is where it's at, and which is why I like the fact that you talk about action a lot, because I see that as an essential part of what I call the meaning equation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure, man. I couldn't agree with all of that anymore. I think the thing is, it's like everywhere I've ever been, everyone I've ever talked to, it seems to me that the obvious sort of like brother of happiness, or in fact, probably the father of happiness, is purpose. So similar to what you're talking about, I think. And I don't believe for one minute that you're meant to trade 5 days for 2 days. I don't think Monday to Friday is meant to, that's not what we're here for. That's like animals can give a crap what day it is. I don't know why people get impending doom on a Sunday night because they've got to go to work on a Monday. I don't know why people get impending doom when they have to go to work. However, I do know that when people retire, a lot of the time that's when people would, I don't mean die physically, but they have that, like, you can see it. They've lost their buzz. They've lost their mojo. And it's because they don't have purpose. This is why keeping fit's a really good one, because, and again, talking about the difference between the actual event and the process to get there. People always see the event. They see someone with like a six pack and they go, oh my God, that guy's lucky. Or that guy's it's the process. It's the fact that that person did something every single day of their life. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing every day. You brush your teeth every day. Hopefully you put your pants on every day. Hopefully, do you know what I mean? It's all the stuff you teach your kids as well. It's important. And if it's worth doing, it's worth doing every day. And purpose is part of that. I absolutely believe that. I know that. I remember back in the day, if I used to I'd love to just cotch and just sit on the couch and play video games, or whatever. I can't do that now because it makes me sad. It doesn't make me happy. I can do it for an hour or so. I love chilling with my kid when we'll go and do some exercise together, or we'll bake a cake or something like that, and then we'll sit down and we'll play some games. But we're doing it together. I do that on my own, man. I want to kill myself. You know, it's just so bad because I'm not. There's nothing I'm doing. The other thing I believe as well, just off the back of something you just said, was talking about action, is I genuinely believe this. I haven't worked out a way to like coin the phrase so that it doesn't sound absolutely dumb. But the idea of doing something really shit is a million times better than doing nothing at all. I genuinely believe that. Mm-hmm. And I often use the example of say like Apple's iPhone, right? So it doesn't work. It constantly needs updates. It's always buggy. There's always something that needs doing. But while someone somewhere is building the perfect phone that never needs an update and totally works and does everything, Apple are selling you a phone. And it's that they're doing something that's not completely finished and they're putting it out there and then they're figuring it out as they go. I love that kind of that, you know, that saying like an entrepreneur is someone that jumps off the cliff and builds the parachute on the way down. And I love that kind of that thing. Like, I would much rather die trying than not live at all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And interestingly, I unpackaged this concept with a guy called Peter Brown, I think his name was. And he said that there was this concept in the 1950s called like errorless learning. And basically, you know, this idea of kind of perfection and stuff. And I think that we've still got that legacy, you know, a number of decades on where people have still got this kind of perfectionist that everything has to be perfect before you kind of set sail and all the rest of it and stuff. And I think that is what kind of paralyzes people into this kind of inaction. You know, I was talking to Steve Pressfield about this a couple of episodes back around the whole aspect of resistance. And, you know, he said, you know, resistance is generally felt the highest around the things that are most important and meaningful for you to pursue. And, you know, meaning is that kind of, its cousins are purpose and fulfillment. They're like the triplets, you know.
And absolutely love that.
And people, once you get your head around that, then you can kind of sort of begin to sort of unpackage where things are going wrong. But I think, yeah, I do think this is the kind of, it's a conversation we could do for like 3 or 4 hours, but I think there's a missing link in this whole discussion around kind of mental health and specifically men's mental health. Because, you know, for thousands of years, we were building stuff, we were hunting, we were doing stuff which was taking us forward. You know, life might have been hard, but you know, you were still doing things to kind of take you forward. And where we're kind of quite comfortable now, we're like, well, you know, I'm quite comfortable here. And to do that would make me uncomfortable. So why would I want to do that? But the problem is that kind of that fulfillment in life doesn't exist in that comfort place. It exists in the doing bit. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. It's one of those conversations I end up having all the time where it's just like when if it's one of my mates or to just say, you know, ex-student or something like that, where they're like, right, I want to get fit now. I always use fitness as a example just because it's physical and you can see it. I think sometimes when you're talking, you can use the same concept for different forms of mental health and everything like that. But with some, there is no way if someone turns around and goes, I just can't lose weight. Yes, you can. Like you might have to figure out what the thing is for you. But, you know, if you go under your calorie intake, you know, and you're in deficit, you will lose weight. It's that simple, right? So is that thing of just being able to just start doing something, just to make the start, just to get it. You don't even have to think about finishing it straight away. It's just making that first move. And I couldn't agree more, mate. I think the way that I think about it is fear or, you know, anything that's uncomfortable for me, unless it's like obvious fear, like there's a lion in my front room. That's going to be dumb for me to try and tame that lion, like, because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a lion tamer. But if it's fearful stuff where it's like you're public speaking or, you know, whatever it is for you, it will be different for everyone. The way that I see it, I try and flip that switch and I think, like, hang on a sec, fear is always a prerequisite for something going really, really well for me, or it's that I feel like I've leveled up. So as long as I notice that, like I said, I'm not talking about like let's drive 100 miles an hour off a cliff. That's not the type of fear I'm talking about. But if it's, you know, if it's the like, oh my God, I want to ask that girl out on a date, or I want to, you know, I want to go to a new dance class and I've never danced before. I want to learn to sew and I think all my boy mates will take the mick out of me. That feeling of like, oh God, I'm not sure about this, always is a prerequisite for something going really well. I can't think of one time that I haven't forced myself to do something like that where it hasn't worked out and I haven't been happy with myself afterwards for doing it, you know?
Gents, I'm going to quickly jump in here because I have an exciting announcement. If you have tuned in for any period of time or have grabbed a copy of my book, The Dad Blueprint, you'll be familiar with my journey and why I started Guild of Dads. I discuss how I struggled by myself for a long time before I had the good fortune to get around other men on a similar journey to me, which is when my life really changed for the better. Which is why I'm excited to announce that I've built my own community of men and dads called the Dads Circle, which opens its doors in January, and I'm looking for 20 men like you to become founder members at a special lifetime rate of just £40. But you'll need to get in now, because once these spots are filled, the monthly subscription is £80 a month. So what do you get? A private members area. This is a bespoke area where you can set up a customized profile away from any social media, so you can link up with other men and share ideas, suggestions, insights, and strategies to help you succeed, leaving you more time to focus on the things and the dad you always wanted to be. Weekly virtual Zoom sessions in which you'll have an opportunity to join others to discuss a monthly topic, so you can share experiences and gain insight about yourself from the comfort of your own home. A copy of my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. This book takes you chapter and verse through my own journey, but also the secret system I used in order to radically change my life. This includes a proven 12-week method and shortcuts to systemize your development, so no more chaotically trying to change by yourself. There'll also be weekly virtual team calls in which you'll share your wins and losses for the week and be held accountable for keeping to your objectives and tactics to achieve them, so that your growth is supercharged from day one and you're no longer doing this alone. We record all calls because I recognise that you can't be everywhere at once, so all the calls are recorded, meaning you can access content at your convenience anytime at your own pace and not feel overwhelmed. We have monthly topics in which we'll explore a different topic monthly, which means you get to grow, learn and build your knowledge of yourself and others in a supportive environment. There'll also be physical and mental challenges. Many of us are living in a comfort zone now, and you can achieve far more than you think. By engaging in challenges, you're able to see beyond what you thought was possible for yourself and grow in confidence and accomplishment. The other thing is that you'll have access to a 12-week battle plan, which is a proven powerful system to help you identify where you want to go in life and how you get there, along with tracking resources. This means no more chaotically trying to improve here, there and everywhere. Along with the growing library of resources, including books, videos, documents and also other podcasts, there is no limit to the amount of things that you're going to have access to. The best bit of it all is that there's no contract. So if it, for any reason you find that the dad circle is not for you, then you can leave at any time, no questions asked. If it's not for you, there's no obligation to stay. If you want in, spots are filling fast, and once the waiting list is full for this early bird offer for lifetime membership at £40, that's it. To put your name down, simply email me, joe@guildofdads.com, as it will be first come, first serve for when the doors open in January. I look forward to seeing you on the inside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's what's weird is often, you know, when you're kind of getting into the kind of trenches, if you like, and you're feeling that stuff is getting really difficult. You know, I've noticed it on the journey I've been on with the podcast, that sometimes, you know, when I'm up, you know, up early in the morning doing the work and stuff, you know, sitting here in the dark at 5 o'clock in the morning with my dressing gown on editing, you'll sort of think, why am I doing this? But then all of a sudden an opportunity will open up. You know, someone will contact me and say, I think you should speak to this person or whatever. And stuff just, all of a sudden, it's kind of like you're kind of cycling up a hill on your bike, and then you get to a flat bit and then it levels up and then you see this lovely view, and then it kind of gets a bit harder, and it's kind of this kind of meandering trail of life that you kind of go through, the kind of journey, it's described by Joseph Campbell as a hero's journey, I think it's called. So, but yeah, it's interesting how it kind of unfolds. Definitely, definitely. You talk about, how one of your things is kind of breaking, and you've out of autopilot. You've mentioned it a few times in this conversation today. Is that, how do you kind of articulate? Is that kind of where people are not in a place of awareness or consciousness? They're just kind of, there's not an awareness of the implications of their actions or what they're doing or what's going on around them. How does that kind of sort of manifest itself?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that, you know, if you've been on autopilot, if you end up regretting something you've done, and that could be something really, really micro or something really, really macro. For a real case in point that I would imagine the majority of the people listening to this will go, oh, yeah, is you've watched more than one episode of something on Netflix and you feel like you've wasted the night, and then you wake up the next morning and go, not a massive thing in some respects. You do it for enough years, it is a massive thing. But so I think it's just that reality check. I think it's being able to, I like I said previously, I do not believe for one moment that people are evil or good. I think they have the capacity to be both. And I think a lot of things kind of try and push people down a certain route. Advertising, the media, what you learn at school, what your parents learn at school and what their parents taught them and what your parents taught you. And it all gets passed down. Doesn't necessarily mean it's right. Doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It could be anything. But I think that if you kind of take that and think to yourself, right, okay, if you stop for the moment and go, is this the right thing to do? I genuinely believe that everyone can answer that wholeheartedly and sincerely and truthfully. Whether they ask themselves the question or not is a completely different thing. So I try and people laugh about this, but for me, it's like, I'm not the cleverest person in the world. I just get stuck in with stuff. And I taught myself to do that. That's not something everyone, honestly, genuinely, if I meet new people, normally it will come up, man, you're really positive all the time. Like, man, you're really happy all the time. I am because I choose to be. I genuinely make that decision. I'm not going to waste my life. That I can't think of anything worse. And if I can think to do that, case in point, right? So say if I come back to my missus, right, which again, hopefully your audience will relate to, I'll come back to my partner and I believe it's my fault. If she's in a mood and I react to that, that's my fault. So what I do is when I'm on my drive home or I'm walking home or whatever it is, I think to myself, right, okay, how I've got a transition. This is why half the book's called The Transition. I need to transition from this thing here to that thing there. What I need to think about is what's going to be going on at that thing there. And I need to prep myself for it. And I need to be ready for it. 99 times out of 100, I come in the house, my missus is cool. She's like, hey, baby, blah, blah, blah. We have a smooch, you know, carry on with dinner, whatever. Every now and again, it's like a war zone, bruv. Like, do you know what I mean? Mm. So I open the front door. And I believe if she's doing a lid about something, then I believe it's my fault if I react to that badly. So what I try and do is I try and preempt that. Again, this boils down to being in control, being mindful, stopping the event before it happens. The prevention is better than cure. So if I can think to myself on my drive home, right, she might have had a bad day. I don't know. She might have had the worst news in the world. She might have just had one of those days where she stubbed her toe and then like she burnt herself on the kettle. And then like, you know, she's gone out to do something and her friend didn't meet her or something like that. She might just be in a bad mood. Whether that's wrong or right or indifferent, that I can't control. Like you're saying, I can't control that. That's her thoughts, emotions, feelings. That's the position she's in, all of that. If I come in and no matter what she does to me, I choose to walk up to her, give her a hug, go, you're right, darling. Is everything okay? Is there anything I can do? Then I believe that I have made that situation better. I've chose to do the right thing there. And then that's down to her, whether she wants to react to that in a positive way or a negative way. So to sort of exacerbate on that, I think it's the same with everything. Like when I get into my car, I always try and think to myself, like, right, dude, there's every chance I'm going to speed or I'm going to drive like an idiot. I'm going to choose not to do that. Do you know what I mean? So I try and preempt myself, not in a sort of boring, meticulous way, just in a genuine, I just try and reality check myself. You know, like, am I dreaming? Give myself a pinch. Like, I just try and do that. You know, I'm winging it the whole time, mate, as I think everyone else is. But, you know, I'm just trying to do the right thing. So I think I can't even remember what you asked me now, Joe.
I was asking you about breaking out of autopilot.
That's hilarious. And the funny thing is, I've got really lame. So back in the day, I used to go to bed at like 4, 5, 6 in the morning, get up at midday, you know, run that game. And now I'm in bed at 9. I'm up early and I do my thing. So this time of night for me to be chatting is really, so I apologize if my brain's not working on full fuel. You asked me about breaking out of autopilot. Yeah, I did pretty much all of that. I think I sit there and I you know, if I'm Netflix and chill or something like that, or YouTube especially, and an advert comes up and I'm not clever enough to go, I'm turning the volume down, I'm looking away. Again, my fault. Do you know what I mean? That's not the advert's fault. That's not anybody else's fault. That's me choosing to break that cipher. And I think that, like, you know, it is that it comes up a lot, but it's that 99%, 1%. If everyone's zigging, I'm going to try my best to zag, because I'd zig for a long time with everybody else. It doesn't seem to work for me. And I think that's the same with everyone else. And weirdly enough, with the situation we're in, not to make it too current affairs, because I've been choosing very wisely, just in conversations recently, whether to talk about coronavirus, not because of what I think it is, but because I think it's a touchy subject, right? But I think at the moment there's a load of bad stuff to it, but there's also I've seen so many people and had experience with loads of people recently where it's like guys that were at work all day that are now on furlough that are like, dude, I get to see my family. Oh my God, I've missed so much time with my kid. Like, why? I can't believe I did that. Autopilot. Yeah. It's not that they knew that they were doing it and they went, right, I don't want to see my kid, I'm going to stay at work. They didn't think. They didn't think about it. So now people are making different decisions to go like, do you know what, Hannah said, actually, when I do go back to normal work or I'm back in the office or whatever it is I do, I'm actually going to make some real quality time for my kid because that's the right thing to do because now I know better.
Yeah.
If I know better and I don't make that decision, again, on me, that's me being a bad person.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's been a necessary reset that's had taken place this year. And I think that reset has been that, looking back, you know, our parents' generation, the work environment was, I think, a lot more relaxed. You know, my parents, you know, told me about, you know, people used to smoke at their desks and they go to the pub at lunchtime, and work, you know, was enjoyable and it was sociable. And but I think in, you know, I started working in what, 97 98, it's progressively, even since then, become more and more kind of balls to the wall, you know, pound of flesh. If you, you know, lunches for wimps, you know, all this kind of stuff and whatever. And we've got into this kind of, we've been kind of pulled along with it. A lot of, I think, employers have kind of said, well, you know, if you don't want to do it, there's plenty of others that do want to do it. And, you know, that has always been the kind of proverbial guillotine hanging over a lot of particularly guys' necks, I think. I'm going to say guys, but just because, you know, the audience for this podcast is predominantly guys. But I think that we've had a massive slamming on of the brakes and a reset this year, where the power has kind of shifted a bit more to the employees, and I think it's like you say, people have been able to be a lot more kind of coming out of autopilot and thinking, well, actually, you know, I've never actually read my kid a story because I'm not actually off the train, you know, much before 8 o'clock. And you know, so I'm getting time to read my kid a story. But not only that, they're getting time to go for a walk. They're getting time to spend some time in the fresh air rather than stuck in a cubicle in a you know, by a desk for the whole day with their, you know, boss saying, when's the reported? And, you know, and so I think there is hopefully a generational step change that's going to come out of this year in terms of resetting that kind of, I think it's also the pace of work as well, because, you know, and I'm going to sound old-fashioned saying this, but like when I first started work, people were still using fax machines, and people listening to this would be like, what? Do they still make fax machines? But the thing is, what was with a fax machine and a telephone, you know, if you didn't want to take calls, you could get your calls fielded. And no one knew when you'd got a fax, it would go in your pigeonhole and you'd pick it up and then you'd respond to it and whatever and stuff. But, you know, email, instant messaging, Teams and that's all great, all this stuff. But people are too on demand. They're, you know, they're not taking time out time. And I hope that 2020 has kind of, like I say, done a bit of a reset on that, really.
Yeah, no, totally agree. I think it's, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because I always feel like with the, you'll know this as well as I do, because I mean, my kid asked me recently, and he came back from school and he was like, oh, man, he's only 12. He's like, man, get these, like, now I'm at big school, I get these stupid emails all the time. And I said, how many emails you get, mate? And he went, oh, like one a day. He was like, what do you? And I was like, mate, I've got like probably, I think it was 12 Google accounts, four Instagrams I run, a couple, and not to show off, it's ridiculous, it's bad. You know, WhatsApp groups, frigging Teams, Zoom, like all of this stuff. And I can't remember who said it, but someone said to me once, or I read it somewhere, and he was saying, like, having a phone, having a smartphone on you is basically like having a million bits of string just tied to different parts of your body. And no matter what you're doing at any point, someone can just go yoink and you're like, oh, hang on a sec, what was that? Okay. And your focus is just all over the shop.
Yeah.
And everyone seems to be in this bubble, which doesn't help the autopilot thing, because it's, you know, your phone's doing this, ads are telling you that, this is telling you that, and it's just coming at you at all angles. And actually, you know, people forget to ring their mum to tell them they love them. People forget to take their kid out for a walk. People forget to, you know, to eat healthy. People, and this again can go from something really minor that, you know, is laughable, right up to something really, really, you know, so bad and so sad or horrible and treacherous. And, you know, I often try, reality checks wise, I often try and think to myself, like, right, if I'm on my deathbed, you know, have I left a legacy? If I've got a bunch of people stood around me, whether that's my wife, my kid, my family, friends, or just the nurse in the room, whoever it is, and you know, and they're like, right, you've got your last words. What are they? I know for a fact I'm not going to be like, come closer. You know, my last breath, just be like, you know, that message I didn't send you on Facebook, I forgot to like your, you know, it's not going to happen, is it? It's like, I'm going to remember things, I'm going to think about are regrets, times I forgot to be, you know, a good person, or tell someone I love them, or you know, whatever it is. And I think, again, if you ask people, they always know the answer. It's just whether they think to ask themselves the question beforehand or not, I think is the kicker.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I like the way you kind of articulated where you were, you know, the people that you were zigging and zagging with and stuff. And I like that expression, because I think there is also this sense that, oh, well, everyone else is doing it, so I'm going to do it, sort of thing. And I think that's kind of a bit of a dangerous road to kind of oblivion in some respects, because people have got into this kind of, you know, what am I trying to say here? You don't get a handbook for life when you're younger, so you kind of have to work it out as you go along. So if you're going to get shit wrong, you're going to get shit wrong, and you'll kind of work it out and stuff. But I think that there is this, I heard somebody else say the other day, it's this, it's not anaesthetizing. It's this whole concept of, I've written it down here somewhere, self-sedating, I think the word is. So we have this stuff that is where we are kind of sedating our emotions, because we don't want to face down emotions, we don't want to face down thoughts, and we don't want to face down all that ugly stuff that's under the bonnet. So what I think a lot of people do now is they're sedating themselves with stuff, or something that's going to give them a dopamine hit, or something that's going to, you know, and we are almost all kind of addicts in this perpetual cycle that's going on at the minute. And it's how you can break that down and get into an awareness state where you're actually seeing things for what it is, that, hang on a minute, this is triggering me to go and do something that I don't really want to be doing. You know, how can I short fuse this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. And I mean, like, so to go back to how sort of easily implementable, and you know, I like quick, easy hacks, not because I put the work in, I'm down for that, but I like the simple thing that I can't, basically, if you said to me, like, dude, you've got to climb Everest, immediately there's that part of me that's like, well, even if I wanted to, like, how am I going to do that? If you said to me, right, you need to stand up and sit down right now, I can do that. I've got no excuse not to do that. And then the way my brain works is I go like, well, I've got my legs. That means I'm really lucky to have that. I should use them. So I should stand up and sit down right now, because that's, you know, that's what Joe said. So it's that kind of thing. So I, even to this day, and I seriously, I have alarms that my phone screensaver says, stop fannying about. That's what I've got this week. It will change next week. So every time I look at my phone, I'm like, oh, God damn it. Okay. I have things in my sun visor in my car. We'll have little notes that I've left there just to reality check myself. I'll have it before I go to bed, the alarms, and this changes weekly or monthly, but the alarms that will go off at sort of 7 or 8 o'clock at night will be like, right, put your gym stuff by the front door. Because then I know when I've done that, I've made that decision. That means when I walk past it in the morning, I go, God's sake, Lee from yesterday, here we go. Do you know what I mean? But at least, and then at least I do it. And it's that thing of not, you know, I'm not saying you definitely shouldn't meticulously plan everything, because then you become the opposite of that. Mm. But I think sitting somewhere in the middle, you know, it's that the game exists. You need to play it. The wave is there. You either ride it or you fight against it, or you sit on the sidelines watching it. And I would much rather try and ride it, for want of a much lesser hippie expression. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We touched upon role models a bit earlier on in our conversation, and also before we came on air tonight. And I know you work, I'm sort of intrigued, because I know you work with an organisation called the 100 Club, which is 16 to 21 year olds, I think, around sort of different aspects of kind of growth, success and stability. And one of the things that I've unpackaged in recent episodes with guests is the fact that there is a bit of a role model crisis going on right now. And I wonder what your kind of thoughts are around that, and what you see, and, you know, in terms of the kind of younger people that you're working with, and just what your thoughts are on it, really, because it's just something that comes up a lot. And we spoke about it before we came on air today, and it's something which is kind of concern to me, so to speak, being a man of 41, so to speak.
But I'm 34 and you've got way more hair than me, nicer teeth and nicer eyes, so fair play, mate. If I look anywhere near as good as that, I'm going to be well happy.
It's where I've been lifting recently. It's the effects of testosterone on my old bones, you see. So.
Love that. Like, role model wise, I think this is the other thing, is like everyone's craving that. And I taught for years, like, weirdly enough, while I was going through my own personal crisis, like I said, I kept it so under wraps. I managed to hold myself together. I won Teacher of the Year award at the college I was at. You know, I got all these accolades and stuff like that. You would never know. You would have literally never known. Inside, I was exploding or imploding, or however you want to think about it. And I think at the time, one of the things that came up all the time is, and something I really believe, and which is why I always sort of struggled teaching to a syllabus. Whenever I got given my syllabus at the start of term, I'd be like, no, like half of it I haven't done. So I'm not going to teach something I haven't done before. I don't think that's fair. And thing number two, you know, some stuff I'd be like, this isn't going to help them in the real world. You know, it's all the real world, but you know what I mean? Mm. I used to have this thing where I'd just try and teach. I'd try and teach what was right. And I genuinely, if I'm being really honest with you, mate, I think the only reason I ever got kudos as a teacher and I did well out of that side of it, and people can relate to me, is because I try and relate to them. If you turn up for my class and you're wearing, I don't know, you're wearing a Star Wars t-shirt and I'm teaching you drum rhythms, then I know it's going to be easier for me to go, right, okay, what about Obi-Wan Kenobi, da 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 da. You're going to pick it up quicker than if I start trying to teach you, like, you know, like ballet moves, like plie, or I don't know, whatever. So I'd always try and relate to people. And to answer your question, I think everyone's jonesing for that. Everyone is hankering for someone to go, dude, I get you. And if I don't get you, I'm going to try and figure out a way to allow you to be you, to get you to come out of it. So on one hand, I think that there is more role models than ever in a really good way, because I think at the flick of a switch on YouTube, you can find stuff like this. You can find someone like yourself talking to people that's awesome. I mean, you must be a role model to so many people with what you're doing. That's just going to build and build and build. And that's so cool. And so I think on one side, there's that. I can sort of stalk the Rock if I want to, you know, or whatever it is. On the other side of it, I think that the way that the media is and has been for a while now, but also the way that, like, you know, in business it works as well, with like how you put people down a funnel and how a sales cycle works, is very sinister nowadays, and it at least can be. I don't know if you're into your marketing or anything like that. You know, as soon as you start seeing stuff for what it is, if you're a producer as opposed to a consumer, for instance, then you start seeing stuff for what it is. And it's like my nan, right? I love my nan. Nana Hippo, mate. Represent. Nana Hippo's a legend. And she's like the sweetest. I noticed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the sort of TV that elderly people watch, there's like penguins for adoption, camels for adoption. My nan has adopted like a menagerie, like a frigging Noah's Ark's worth of stuff. Now, you can say what you like about it, or you can think, but that is terrible. Someone's selling my nan because she's, you know, it's patronizing and it's not fair. Mm. So on the other side of it, I think there's, there's a bunch of non-role models that have got as much spotlight as the role models have got. And then you've got to base it down to can the person viewing those two options choose the right one? And that's the bit I think that needs the work. I think it's relating to someone and giving them the opportunity to go, hold on a sec, you know, just because I'm at school. My kid, I don't know what your kids are like with that, but my kid is killer at anything creative, anything that lights him up. I see what lights him up. I see what makes him happy. How was school today, mate? Meh. Okay, well, that's not your fault, buddy. That's your teacher's fault. That's what I genuinely believe that. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that the teacher's done a bad thing. And I'm not saying all teachers, for God's sake, that's not what I'm saying. But if he comes back and he's not happy, I believe you should be excited and gassed up to go to school, and you should be even more excited when you come out. I've seen it happen. You can do it. I've had teachers before that have done that, and I didn't even enjoy the lesson. I wasn't interested in the lesson before that teacher, and I'd come out of, you know, I remember like frigging home economics when I was a kid. I had no interest in that whatsoever. Teacher was awesome. I love home economics. Do you know what I mean? It works like that. They're related to me.
And they see something funny, or, and they see something in you that other people don't necessarily either. And I talked about this with the previous guest, John Gray, who co-authored the Boy Crisis with Warren Farrell. And he, you know, they're quite into this whole concept of, you know how the kind of mainstream education system is not really adequate for boys. And we don't have the same situation over here. But for instance, in the States, you know, there's a lot of lads being medicated with, Adderall. Adderall.
Yeah.
For ADHD, for ADHD and stuff, and you know, but you know, there's this whole discussion around, you know, boys being served in the education system, and you know, boys' needs being fundamentally different to girls' needs in terms of, you know, them wanting to kind of do stuff and, you know, be outside and blowing off steam and getting stuck in with things and whatever, and you know, there is a whole discussion right now about, you know, this, you know. Are we kind of trying to feminize young boys too much, to the extent that actually, they're not interested in school because it just doesn't float their boat anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly that. I think I don't know. I remember not enjoying school myself for the most part. However, I've always, as soon as I got out of school and I could, for instance, not write essays, but write the things I wanted to write, when I could, you know, I didn't have to go to a music lesson listening to particular types of music I hated, and I could come out and play music I enjoyed, when I could have conversations that weren't, where I wasn't told that you're not allowed to say that, or that's not, you know, you shouldn't, you know, when I could start to be myself, I started enjoying what I was doing, the same subjects, just with a different perspective, right? So, and I've questioned this for years. I don't know. I'm not saying that there's an absolute amount of lessons that should be taught. However, I believe that physical education, stretching, meditation, how to raise kids, you know, or how to look after yourself, personal hygiene. I'm not saying that they should have like full 3-hour lessons a day, but they should. That's daily. That is that my kid should know to brush his teeth without, he's 12. I shouldn't have to tell him every day. That should be a thing at school, in my opinion. He should learn to stretch. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it sounds funny, but I can tell you anything you want to know about trigonometry and plate tectonics. Never used it in my life. Now, if I was going to be a geologist or a mathematician, fair enough. But that's not where I'm at. But there are these basic like life skills that I think that could just be given a bit more time. And I think that going back to what we were saying a minute ago, I think that would help with people making the decision of the right role model. I genuinely believe my kid should be gassed to go to school because his teacher X and teacher Y and teacher Z are just awesome. And he's like, I don't want to leave this. I'm learning. Learning is so sick. If he wants to learn about Fortnite, he's gassed up. He loves that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If he wants to learn about football or whatever. So it's that relation.
Yeah. And I think it's also because my eldest has started going to secondary school. And I think the other thing as well is leading by example, because, you know, I always used to get, you know, frustrated at school where, you know, we would be, as pupils, be held to kind of quite high standard. You know, your uniform needs to be right and your books need to be ready. And if, you know, so there was kind of quite high standards put on us by pupils. And then there'd be like teachers not turning up, or they turn up like late for the class, or they turn up unprepared for the class and chuck you a load of photocopied handouts and stuff and that. So I think this is kind of, and this is something that, you know, I'm noticing more and more as a parent of a secondary school age kid is that actually there needs to be a lot more in terms of role models of we will set an example, because I think one thing I've noticed is there's a hell of a lot of do as we say, not what we do going on at the minute. And you kind of like, and this is maybe not all schools. So, you know, I'm not going to generalize and I'm not going to say this is all schools, but I think that schools need to understand that they need to lead by example. And I think that some schools are doing the do as we say, not what we do. And that looks really bad for parents, because parents are just like, well, hang on a minute. You're saying that the kids need to turn up on time, prepared, and they can't take any time off during term time. Yet a lot of your teachers aren't in. They're turning up late for classes and they're not prepared and ready when they get to the classes. And that's going to be a really unpopular opinion for me to have.
It is what it is.
But I'm just stating as I see it right at the moment, sort of thing. So,
I mean, it's that thing. We live in a time now where you can make a career out of playing video games. You can make a career out of being a YouTuber. And it worries me that kids can go to school and this is going to be a really unpopular view. But again, for it, you know, it is what I think. But you can go to school and you can ask your business teacher who's never run a business, who has no form of entrepreneurship or whatever it is, who hasn't turned over six or seven figures, who hasn't, you know, outright bought their house, and they will give the kids, you know, knowledge on how to run a business or whatever it is. And that's the bit I struggle with. It's the same as anything for me. I think you can be good or bad at something. And I think you can often bounce between the two. You can be here one day or here in the morning, here in the afternoon. I don't think anyone's bad, but I think I totally agree with you. I just think that it's just weird to do the not as, do what I say, not as I do. And as soon as anyone calls bullshit on it, that's, well, detention. What? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Is that what's going on? Do you know what I mean? So I can't have my right of voice. I can't, you know, I noticed recently there's loads of, I won't bring up names, but there's loads of people with their Twitter accounts or, you know, have been prevented or stopped or blocked. There's been a bunch of stuff I've noticed on YouTube with people that I follow where, you know, their YouTube channel has been taken down or certain videos have been taken down. What the F is going on? Why can't people talk? It's unbelievable to me.
Mm.
So, you know, I think you're right. I think the role model is really, really, really important. And I think that people would be more likely to make that distinction between a good and a bad role model if they've got that understanding for themselves of I can be myself. I don't have to fit into this. Talking to someone about this the other day, and that whole sort of like A plus student, and parents are proud if their kids get an A plus, but normally, and this isn't always the case, and I'm not tarnishing or anything like that, but more often than not, those A plus students end up working for the guy that was selling copies of Hustler in the you know, by the tennis courts or something.
Mm.
You know, that's the person that ends up building the business and that employs this person that will, you know, it seems to me like they're kind of melding a lot of, this is the model citizen. This is what we want. We want someone that will work their whole life in a job that they don't really like. And then they'll, you know, they'll mortgage their house. They'll retire at 65, hopefully 70. And then they can start living their life. That doesn't make sense to me. That, you know, I want my kid to, and I support him in whatever he does. I never pressure him with anything like that. But I really hope that he comes to the point where he goes, do you know what? This 99% thing isn't for me. I'm gonna go and start this business here, and it's something I want to do. I'm gonna go and live in this country if he wants to, whatever it is.
Mm.
If he wants to work as a behind a checkout for the rest of his life and it makes him happy, perfect, absolutely perfect. It doesn't make him happy. You know, that's I worry about that.
Mm. Yeah. There's so much stuff to it. We could do 3 or 4 hours on this quite easily. Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
We've covered an enormous amount of stuff, and we've also kind of put the world to rights a little bit as well in our conversation this evening. But it's been fantastic kind of picking your brains as to, you know, the journey that you've been on and you know, the techniques that you kind of advocate using and the whole concept of autopilot. I'm going to ask this question because I don't prime any of my guests for this. What is the thing in life that gives you meaning, Lee?
Absolutely. If I don't have purpose, I don't have meaning. My purpose might be being in love with my wife, loving my child, trying to be a good role model myself. It also is things like looking after my body, looking after my mind. It's also looking after my business, making sure this one of my dearest friends said this to me, and I wish that I'd have come up with this myself. I love this as a sentiment. And I got him down to the 100 Club that you mentioned, because we get guest speakers in. Mm-hmm. So just for your listeners, it's a club for 16 to 21-year-olds, completely free. You can come whenever you want. You don't have to come. You can miss weeks, kind of thing. And we teach motivation, mindset, business acumen, entrepreneurship, stuff like that. And I always get guests come in. And we've had some really, really wicked people come in or over Zoom and stuff like that. And one of my really dear friends came in, and I asked him the same question you just asked me in a roundabout way. And I said, what's your, if you had to give these kids one sentence, what would you say? And like I said, I wish I'd have coined this myself. And he said, always leave stuff better than you found it. And I love that. I absolutely love that. And I think if I can live by that as one of my things, then, you know, and to do that, I have to have purpose. I have to be able to go, I'm going to put effort into this, man. It's effort to tell your kid to brush their teeth when you know they haven't done it. It's effort to go down to sports day and run in the race because you know you look like a bell end. Do you know what I mean? It's effort to you know, it's like frigging Sunday night and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, I've got this whole project tomorrow, and actually it's to build a castle out of like paper mache, and it's like 9 o'clock on a Sunday night. That's effort. But you know, by doing those things and putting that effort in, something brilliant comes out of it. Something amazing comes out of it. So, yeah, to answer your question, purpose, 100%.
Excellent.
How about yourself? What's yours?
What gives me meaning is helping other people through what I know.
Love that as well.
Yeah, because you know, I don't claim to be the man with all the answers. I don't claim to be perfect, but if I can help people with what I know or what other people know, certainly on here, then that definitely is what gives me meaning. That's for sure.
Love that. You're a good guy, Joe. I really, really appreciate your time, mate.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it too. It's really, it's been a really wicked conversation having you on here. What is the best way for people to find out about you, what you do, link up with you, drop you a message, and also you can give a shameless plug for your book as well now.
No worries. Well, you can get me on Grindr, Big Boy 69. You can email me at lee@leebridges.co.uk, which is, I'm very well aware that I am that douchebag that has his own name twice in his email address. It wasn't my idea, but yeah, lee@leebridges.co.uk. You can also go on my website, which is leebridges.co.uk. You can buy the book from Amazon. It's called Do Shit, Get Shit Done. Or just Google it, you'll find it. What else? Instagram is @drum_hacker, that's my drum account, or @lee_bridges. But yeah, hit me up on Facebook or whatever. I'm one of them. I get back, it's starting to prove fairly painful, but I get back to all my messages, no matter how long that takes. And at the moment, I'm doing a virtual book tour. So what I'm doing is going around the country, giving out free copies of the book, because I couldn't do a book tour because of coronavirus. We just got in Waterstones, by the way, which is awesome.
Excellent.
Which is really, really cool. So we're doing this book tour. So what I'm doing is on Facebook groups, putting wherever I am in the country, just putting down, cool, I'm here, I'm giving out books, first come, first serve. Inbox is blowing up. We're getting sort of like circa 200 messages a day. So I'm replying to all of them. So if you do send me anything, I will reply to it, but it'll probably take me a little bit of time. So, but yeah.
All right.
I think that's my socials. Yeah. Buy my book.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, sir. I'm going to bring it to a close now, but thank you for your time this evening and sharing your pearls of wisdom with us. And I'll catch up with you soon.
An absolute legend. Really, really appreciate it. Have an awesome day.
Cheers, man. Cheers. I'm really pleased Lee Bridges joined me today and shared some of his wisdom when it comes to getting your life back on track. You can check him out over at leebridges.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram. His book, Do Shit, Get Shit Done, is out now. I'll link all this up in the show notes, along with how you can get in touch with Lee and all the other stuff we discussed over at guildofdads.com. As you could hear, we had a good fun on this conversation today, and it was as much about Lee telling me his story as it was about us putting the world to rights in some respects. Like other episodes, there were particular points we could have gone off on for hours. So maybe what I'll do is I'll get Lee back on in the future to delve into some of these other points we discussed. Lee shares some great insights around his own personal struggles, but also how he maintains his sobriety using a number of strategies to remain off autopilot, as he calls it. I was particularly interested in his views on education as it relates to role models, given his own experience in this area and the work he does with young people. And it's important for dads and young people to discuss example setting and role models without fear of reprisal for speaking out. It's one thing, one of the few things that I feel very strongly about. There's also a video of this interview over on the Guild of Dads YouTube channel, and you can link up with me over on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook using the handle at Guild of Dads. There's a Dad's Facebook group you can join, but shoot me a message or comment and say hi, as I love to hear from you guys. I'm teaching you how to follow a simple system and plan, just like many of my guests, in order to transform all areas of your life so that you can live more purposefully with much greater fulfillment and meaning. It's all in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. You can grab it free at guildofdads.com/dad. In order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. The fee for this show is that you share it with others so that they may benefit from anything you find useful or interesting. If you know someone that could do with improving their relationships, could do with a life rethink or different perspective, share this episode with them. The best bit? You don't have to tell them why you're sharing it with them, but it could be just what they need to hear. Hopefully you find something insightful in every episode, so share with dads you know. In the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.